Blog Talk Radio.
By the very talented singer-songwriter Keith Chagall. Well, a big hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, June 24th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time. So a big thank you for joining us. Love to have you with us, and we love to hear from you. So please call in to listen live or ask questions at 347-857-2710. That number again is 347-857-2710. We are here live until 3:45 p.m. Pacific time, and you're going to be in store for a very wonderful show because I am so fortunate to have another special guest. But before I introduce my guest today, I want to make a little special announcement about a fabulous benefit that's coming up this Sunday, June 27th, for all you big cat lovers, and I'm talking big cats like cheetahs, cougars, that kind of thing. This event is for Cat Haven. This is a sanctuary for wild cats just about 3 hours north of Los Angeles in the Sequoias. And again, it's this Sunday, June 27th, from 2 to 6 p.m. You can buy tickets in advance for $25, and at the door, it's $35. And you will be seeing Tango, the cheetah, the live cheetah, will be there, as well as some very adorable bobcats. So I hope you will join us on the 27th from 2 to 6 p.m. And you can go to the website at www.cathaven.com and look under events, and you will find the event called Let's Tango for Cat Haven's Coolest Cats. I just wanted to put it out there for all you animal lovers. And the big ticket item is one lucky winner will get to test drive a Lamborghini. Now, if you want to go fast and you can't ride a cheetah, you can surely get in a Lamborghini. So that sounds like a wonderful event. And you can also email me here at goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. I can give you all the information again. Well, let's not waste any more time. My special guest today wears many hats, and one being that of a voiceover actor. So it is so possible she'll be here as the voice of Jane Jetson or some original character she's created. So we're in for a lot of fun and who knows what. She's also a writer and a creator of a performance salon called I Love a Good Story. Lori Fraser is also a very cool chick, according to her imaginary friend Carlotta. I want to meet her, Carlotta. So let's discover more about this very talented lady and welcome Lori Fraser to the show. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Lauren Leibowitz.
I know you kind of like saying that. It just kind of rolls off the tip of your tongue, doesn't it?
I know. I love that. I'm so happy that you called.
Yes. Well, thank you for answering, because it would be a very interesting 45 minutes solo. But I'm prepared. I'm always prepared. I was a Girl Scout, so I could have done knots or, I don't know, how to not play with fire. Would have thought of something.
No, you're very good at that.
Yeah.
Now, in fact, you always have, every time I've ever talked to you, you've always had like a question or something to, so you could always join in, any conversation. I admire
that. I have none of those today.
All right.
Okay. No, but I'm dying, and I'm sure our listeners are dying too. Could you or would you please thrill us with the voice of Jane Jetson?
Okay, you know it never comes over on the George, Judy, I'm on the radio, dear.
Oh.
Hello, dear. I can't come to the phone right now. I'm on the radio.
Oh, God. That's beautiful. Don't you hear the applause? I can hear the roar of the crowd.
Oh, oh, Jane. Oh, Jane needs some work. Somebody out there write something for her, would you?
Yeah, really. I mean, let's bring Jane. When you look at the show, The Jetsons, and again, I always seem to be dating myself on the show, that show was so ahead of its time, don't you think?
Oh, it was. Listen, that show was way ahead of my time, too. Because it was, I came in after the wonderful Penny Singleton, who also played Blondie, by the way, Blondie and Dagwood. Penny Singleton, after Penny. So I didn't do the show, and I didn't do the movie. I did all the commercials and dolls and stuff like that after the fact. But it's still been wonderful, dear. But it was ahead of its time.
Is there a Jane Jetson doll?
Yeah, there is. There's a few of them. I don't know if she talks. If she does, she doesn't have my voice. But there's stuffed Jane Jetson dolls, which that's kind of,
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
Yeah. But it was my favorite show growing up. I loved that show.
And so how did you get involved in voiceover work?
You know, I think it just, I think what happened was I was a commercial performer for a while and a regular actress, and I did my, you know, I didn't work a whole lot, but I was young, and I did, after hanging out in a trailer for about, you know, 11 hours waiting to say, I'll have a tab, you know, and after driving around the city and changing my shirt at stoplights, we had the forever plaid shirt, because when you were in the commercial business years back, you always had a plaid shirt in your car because that's just what you had to wear. That made you Midwestern, and everybody wanted a Midwestern person in their commercial because that was wholesome. Then, so my hair is really curly, and I was always either too ethnic for the straight parts or too straight for the ethnic parts, so looking anyway. So I decided, you know, this doing my hair, I'm going to be bald by the end of this if I just keep trying to straighten my hair for this part and make it. So really it was all about the hair, and I decided, you know, voiceovers would be wonderful because I can do any character. They would look at me and say, well, you don't really look like a whatever, a baker. You look more like a, you know, a housewife, or you look more like, you know, a cook, but you can't be this and you can't be that. So I thought, but you know, with a voice, you could be a little kid, or you could be a very old kid, or you could be, you know, all kinds of things, accents and everything. So I decided to go in that direction, and that was years and years ago, and you know, and I've been going there ever since. No, many moons.
Well, you know, that's wonderful. You have a wonderful sense of play, and here's a perfect example of how you take a, let's say, a no and make it a yes, that there is other options. And so that's wonderful that you found a niche for yourself.
Well, thanks. It's always through, I don't know if it's through survival or it's just through, yeah, there's always a yes. You know, there's always, I just believe that there's always a yes. You know, on the other side of every no is a yes. You just have to find it. It's always
well,
there.
And it also, there's so many no's to a yes.
Yeah. No.
Does that make sense? Yeah. But you know what? We don't have to make sense because that's just who we are. And you know what? We have a caller. Let's see who our mystery guest is, shall we?
I'd love that.
I know. I love mystery.
Love a mystery.
I love a mystery. Hello, you're on the air live with Lori and Lauren. Who is this?
This is a yes-er.
Oh, it's a yes-er. Hello, yes-er. You came
How
in
are
as a
you?
Mystery guest.
Well, I just was overhearing this yes, the need for yes, and I thought it was very important.
I love it, and I happen to recognize our mystery guest.
Who is
the
it?
Lovely Zach Kleiman, who has been on this show many times. So how nice to have you call in. Do you have a question for Lori?
What is the most difficult no to get over?
Oh, my gosh. You had to call me today, Zach. Okay. The most difficult no to get over is...
Maybe not for you.
Lori, go wherever you want to go.
You know, the most difficult no to get over for me was I happened to have to lay my little 14-year-old Labrador into doggy heaven the night before last, and my most difficult no was, no, she's not coming back. That was the hardest one so far. And And that was, and on the other side of no would be, yes, she had an incredible life, and I had her for 14 years, and she's my best friend.
Mm.
So, and I got to give her, you know, I got to let her go, which was, I think, wonderful. It was my only, I've never done that before, and I never realized how peaceful, you know, that process can be, because it didn't ever sound too peaceful. But so there you go. Sorry you asked, Zach.
No, not at all.
But it was, yeah, so I think any no, and that was really a really final no.
How long did it take you to do? I mean, I know with our dog it took almost a year.
Oh, what kind of dog?
The one that I'm talking about is a Lhasa.
Oh, they're people dogs. I mean, I think they come back as people come back as that kind of a dog. I really believe it, because when you look at a Lhasa, you see a face and you see a person. They have such a distinct personality.
Well, now see, I had a big Labrador, and I thought she was in. She came to me because I love food, and she would do anything for a biscuit. So I figured that was my experience. But yeah, on the other side of that no was a yes. So that was the hardest no for me. How about you guys?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
what about
going
you?
That direction.
Back to you.
Well, I since I hear so many voices in my head, I do have to say no to a lot of them in order to do the work I do on the tennis court. And then within moments, though, I can find the voice to listen to, the one that I say yes to.
Hmm. Well, Zach, share with Lori what kind of work you do on the tennis court.
I help people overcome internal obstacles to enhance performance.
Oh, wow. That's terrific.
We're dealing with a lot of psychological, personal issues rather than forehands and backhands and footwork.
Oh, I like that. I love that. I love that. Yeah, that's just great. I think anything. I know. I just think it's wonderful
censored yourself, Lori.
I what'd you say?
You censored yourself.
Yes, you were about
I
to
did. I did.
Something.
Because I was going
to
say, you know, I make my living too as a hairdresser, and so I say too because in this world, there's very few people that just make their living as performers. And man, I'll tell you, if you're one of those people, I say, oh, how did you do that? It's incredible. So my many hats, one of them is a hairdresser, and I think we work with people on their obstacles all the time because they sit and look in the mirror for at least an hour, and so many things happen in the mirror. And I would guess that a tennis court is a little bit like that because you're their mirror, you know.
Well, their shots are their mirror. Their expectations become their mirror.
Okay.
I sort of have to get out of the way so that they have a true experience of themselves.
So is that the yes on the other side of the no?
Is that the yes on the other? Tell me, ask that a different way.
Because you said what's the hardest no you've ever done. So then I ask you, what's the hardest, you know, what's the no, the biggest no? And then what's the yes on the other side of that?
Well, from other people, the biggest no from other people that I've seen over the years of doing this is self-doubt. That
are you
second,
sure about that?
Second-guessing, self-doubt. Those are the two big obstacles.
Those are
yes
on
yes.
The other side of that one?
Trust.
Oh, okay. So that's you. You give them the trust.
But that trust is a great thing, Lori, because I'm sure as a performer doing voiceover, you have to trust when you're given a copy for whether it's a commercial or whatever it is, you have to trust the decisions that you make in an audition, that this is the best way to demonstrate your ability.
Yeah, I don't know. Exactly. I don't know if I give them trust at all. I think that the work is to help them experience their ability to trust through exercises, through patience, and demonstration.
Mm. Well, no, I think that, yeah. I mean, I don't know because I don't know I don't do what you do, but it sounds like it's a, you know, it's a wonderful thing to be able to give somebody trust. I know that you're right, Lauren, though, on the in the audition process and in the job itself. I do a lot of auditions for my home, in my little home studio, and I have to trust that the, you know, the universe and everything is in its proper place, and I just, yeah, it's just part of the process, I guess.
Well, you know, the difference in what maybe the perhaps the similarity and the difference in what both of you provide is that Zach's work, because I have been fortunate to experience Zach on the court, is that my experience was that you get to step outside of yourself and you can see what obstacles you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're in a chair with you, Lori, who's somebody, you can see the obstacles, but you really can't step outside of it and said, oh, is that what I do? If I behave this way in this scenario, then I must behave the same way in all areas of my life. So,
you're right. You mean me as the hairdresser, but not
right.
Towards them as a person.
Right. I mean, because, you know, people who sit in a chair, you know, hairstylists, bartenders, people, that profession comes with an ear because people want to tell you their story.
Right.
And I'm sure you've heard many stories. And so,
mm-hmm.
And having a haircut is the one thing, if people are unhappy about themselves, whether it's their weight or whatever, having a different hairstyle is something they can really change. And
right,
maybe feel
exactly.
Better about themselves. So,
but the hairstyle is the metaphor. The hairstyle is the way in to the intimacy and the
mm-hmm.
and the connection between those two human beings, between
exactly
Lori
exactly.
and the client.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's the whole process. You know, a person sits down and they trust you, and you know, and it's a sacred. I think it's a sacred place to You know, it's an honor to be there for that. And so, you know, my job as a human being, as my job as a human being too, I think, is to be there for that person. But as regards to me, do I see myself? Sometimes I see myself in that person, and I go, "Oy vey, wow!" Or you know, that's what I do. Or I hear myself interrupt. Or I go, "Isn't that interesting?" You know. That's something for me to take out and look at later on. So it's a gift. It's either their therapy session or mine, you know.
Or both.
Not always. Yeah, it's not always theirs. It's sometimes mine. And if they come in with you know, buckus because they don't have anything and they just kind of want to, you know, they start off usually with a BlackBerry or something to take their mind off, and the next thing you know, they turn their attention to the moment and being in the moment. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but it's a wonderful place that if you can get to the moment. And
that's what I was going to say. It can be very frightening for a lot of people. And the work that Zach does is you're in that moment because you have to see the ball, then the next moment, how you respond to that, how did you follow through in the shot, what did the opponent do,
mm-hmm.
and it can be vulnerable. You can be vulnerable there, and a lot of people might not want to go there.
Yeah, you know, I liken that to my experience with my girl Annie, and I really thought, you know, this is a process, and I'm a human being, and how fortunate am I that I can feel in the first place. There's a lot of things that I've blanked out in my life that I didn't want to feel, things that happened that weren't so pleasant, and it's, you know, putting up the walls and blocking out. You can keep layering the bricks and putting the cement, and pretty soon you are in your own little fortress. But just how wonderful to be able to feel as a human being and know on the other end that it's a feeling. It's just a feeling, and it will pass. And why, instead of just sitting and waiting for it to pass, I just decided I just want to feel it. You know, I don't want to come in and get rid of all our toys and throw away everything. I want to smell until the smell and feel the sadness, and then until it goes. And when it goes, it will go. And it's part of making me, you know, who I am as a human being, the next step and the next. And it's part of connecting me to you, Zach, who put down a dog, and you, Lauren, who's experienced, you know, success and failure in different things. And it's part of just my connection, being able to reconnect, and then reconnect to someone who I never connected with. And then, oh, I have this connection with you now, because, you know, you also, you know, tripped over your own 2 feet and fell on the sidewalk and broke a tooth, you know, and by not putting up another brick, I get to connect. And sometimes it's, you know, it's really not comfortable, but it's fabulous after I go through that discomfort. It's just fabulous. And
well,
I,
you learn to be, you learn to feel more comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's really, yeah, exactly. That's probably it. Who knew?
Well, yeah, it's all kind of a self-explanatory, and it's about being happy with yourself, and through that, those eyes, can't, your experiences will change.
I was working with a woman who was petrified to come up to the net. She would serve, and she'd stay back, and she would struggle to get into the net if somebody hit short, and she said she's got to learn how to come into the net, and she, after about 3 months of working on it, she said that she feels so out of control, and she hates it. And I looked at her, because it was the first time she had ever said that, and I looked at her and said, that's how you're supposed to feel. She said, I am? I said, yes. She said, oh, that makes everything different. I was trying to be in control. So she went back and she started playing, and it was so, she said, oh, okay, I can do this. I can do out of control easily. But being in control is really hard.
Well, you know, listen, I liken that to the performance. Think about it. I don't know, Lauren, did you ever have this where, as an actress, you could do anything and say whatever, but when they say just be yourself, it's like, what? If I wanted to just be myself, I would have never gotten into this business, you know. This is, no, I don't want to be myself. Don't you get it? Give me a part to play. Come on, come on. And
well, exactly. I used to do stand-up comedy, and I was known as the Princess of Comedy, and the woman that did comedy was a caricature of myself with big hair, and it was a big character. And so when I would invite people to come see me see the show, they would say, so how does it feel if people don't laugh? Do you take it personally? I said, I don't take it personally because it's someone else up there. But I realized that I had to face Lauren being up there. So I peeled away the layers of this Princess of Comedy to come to be a part of me. And there was more vulnerability in that, right, because I wasn't hiding behind a character.
Yeah,
to do that.
I learned that every single, I mean, I'm challenged with that on a constant basis, you know, with, but I am being myself, and then I go, wow, is that, especially when I get the conversational read, you know, oh, it's just a conversational read. I think, well, does every, maybe my conversations have exclamation points after every sentence, you know? Maybe they do. And so it's very interesting to watch. Even in I Love a Good Story, my little storytelling venue, it's, and I always say my little storytelling venue is funny. Every time I try to get a show together, I have so much self-doubt that comes in. And yet now I'm learning to guide, kind of like let it go in and out, because I really live my life as I want to remember it. And I don't want to remember not doing something because I was afraid that it wouldn't be perfect and I wouldn't be good enough. And I rather remember myself being scared, you know, out of my wits, going in and then doing it. And then even if I was scared out of my wits when I came out of it, just, it's okay. It just doesn't really matter. It matters, you know, sometimes I'm not exactly comfortable in my own shoes, but they're usually new shoes then. And I put my foot in a couple of times, and it's like, hey, you know, all of a sudden the shoe goes, I know this foot. And, you know, there's a little match there. So I think that being uncomfortable is not a bad thing. It's living. It's alive. You're alive if you're uncomfortable. If you
exactly.
can say, I'm not comfortable.
Now, Zach, you work with a lot of performance people, actors and actors. What would your take be on how to be you in the situation?
As opposed to being the character?
Right. If somebody says, just be you, Lori, just be you, Zach, how do you help someone discover what their you is?
Good question.
Every now and then I come up with a winner, right?
Finally.
I was
finally.
I was going to go, come on, how's he going to say?
That's right. What is he going to say? Is this time for a commercial?
I got my pen.
Bring it right back.
Well, if they're being asked to, let's say, talk to a group
like
of people.
Like, say, Lori's her comment about going out on audition and somebody says to her,
just be yourself.
Be yourself. How would you help someone discover who that self is?
Well, I don't know if I can help them discover who it is. I think we'd come back to faith, trust, belief, that what comes out of them is theirs.
Yeah,
so
but don't think. Okay, I have a question, Zach. Don't you think at some point you just have to that you make a choice? It's like I choose to believe that this is exactly the right way to do it. You know, I choose. You kind of make a choice because. Sometimes in that situation, you don't have who's going to come up and go, this is definite. This is 100% right, and I have proof right here. You have to just choose, okay, I'm going to believe that this is the right choice.
Well, I'm talking about how to find the bee, that essence.
Well, if it's okay to make the choice, then that is being who Lori is.
Right. That's what I was.
But a lot of people are afraid to make that choice. They either want it to be perfect and right, so they procrastinate from their perfectionistic tendencies, or they have a lot of self-doubt and are not sure if what they say will be okay. There are lots of burden that they carry around. And I guess part of my job is to help take the burden off. Let's see what's there, and then begin to believe that it can evolve.
Well, you know, see, it's funny because, so somebody goes in and they play tennis, and they come away with, yeah, gosh, I understand that. He has a good point there, and yes. And then they come home and they go, but I don't believe that. You know, because self-doubt isn't usually, you know, fixed in an instant. It takes...
No, John Patrick Shanley's, which is, I've been using his definition, is we want to encourage doubt. If doubt gets too big, then it becomes self-doubt in a negative way. But doubt is one of the greatest assets we have. To be able to question things, to be curious, to be interested, to say.
I'm talking about being comfortable in your own shoes right now. I mean, I'm talking about, like Lauren said, how do you do it? How do you make a person feel comfortable? How do you help a person to access to being comfortable? And so you kind of have to jump out there in the wind. You know, it's like jumping out of a plane leaving self-doubt in the cupboard so that you can go out and do your job or whatever is frightening. Can be frightening.
Yes.
And so, you know, a lot of times I'm walking around with self-doubt and I know it's there and I go, okay, this is self-doubt and it's there and it's okay. And there you go. I'll be right back, self-doubt. I'll be right back. We'll get together.
But it's about understand that, like I said before, it's about loving yourself for all of your quirks and everything that makes you.
And like, Lori, that's your technique.
Right.
That's your unique technique.
Right. No, I do always say, stay. Good self-doubt. Good self-doubt. Stay.
But I mean, they're like little flags, like Zach, like you were saying, Zach, that make you question things. And
yes.
I guess, and you can, if you take it too far, then it does become that self-doubt and prevents you from taking action. But it's always a great marker
to create help somebody create a sense within themselves where they start to enjoy risk.
Right. I like that.
Yeah. Right. I think I like, this is not a kind of an oxymoron, enjoying risk.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's maybe not risk anymore once you enjoy it.
Exactly.
I guess you're right about that.
Okay, so Lori, what is the one thing that, what's one risk you would like to take?
Wow, what's one risk I would like to take? oh dear, I'm trying to think. I was thinking, what, do you want to jump out of a plane? Yeah, not really.
What is one thing that you procrastinate more?
I would like to take a day off.
What
is your fear, Zach?
What would be the fear?
Yeah.
That let's say I take Friday off. The first fear that comes to my mind, if it's fear, is the burden or the weight of Saturday, catching up with the 30 phone calls.
Oh my gosh, Zach, we have to have a talk. That's just silly. That's,
Lori, I think you need to put Zach in your chair.
Come and get a haircut, and I will definitely, you will leave, and you will be taking days off. Okay, I got a risk. I would like to risk going out for the whole day not wearing any makeup. And I don't think I'll ever do it for the rest of my life, which is totally fine, but it's a risk that I entertain.
I understand that.
Well, Zach,
I absolutely understand that.
Do you? Yeah. Come on.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I absolutely understand that.
Okay.
Okay, Lori, didn't your mother always tell you, this is what the message my mother gave me, never go out without mascara and a little lip gloss.
Okay, my mother was, she didn't tell me that one, but you know what, that was a good one. Did she really tell you?
Lori, I have to answer this other line. I'll be back.
All right.
Okay.
Bye, Zach.
We'll be here. We'll be here.
Okay.
We'll be here.
Okay.
Yeah. What? So, what did your mother tell you?
So she said to me, she had the thing about curlers. She said, I don't care if you're just taking the trash out. Never go out with your hair in curlers. That's what she told me. And then she also told me, you treat the usher like he is the producer of the studio, because you never know what he's going to be.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Did she say that because she was a supporter of you getting into the entertainment industry?
No, I think she said she was. No, I think she just said that she was a performer herself back in England, that was one of the things probably that her mother passed on to her, you know, and who my grandmother was. She was one of the first child actresses, female, allowed on the Shakespearean stage theater in the round. So she kind of brought my mother up with certain protocol, and my mom passed it on to me. Although I don't think she ever brought her in the rollers, the hair rollers. But I never forget that ever. No, never go. And she'd always say, you never know who you're going to run into at the market, so you might as well, you know, put your makeup on and look nice.
My mother said that. I think from a place of you're single, you never know who you're going to meet. The same message, you know, your mother gave you, that you never know who you're going to meet.
But I like that.
You want to always kind of look your best.
Yeah, but I think that's nice, mascara and a little lip gloss. And I'm really, it's not, and I say a risk, it's because it is a risk for me, but it's nothing. I don't mind putting on mascara and lipstick every day. I feel better with that. But I think that's a nice picture I have in my mind of a little mascara and lip gloss. She didn't say lipstick. She didn't say powder, rouge. She said lip gloss. It was like a little, that's a sparkly part of your face.
Yeah,
kind of,
you know, it's so interesting how I think our childhood, especially mine, what I can remember of it, it paves the way for how you are as an adult.
Oh, it's so true.
And I guess we all encounter certain beliefs that our parents have or had and instill upon us. And as we grow older and we reunite with a certain belief, it's our choice to say, well, you know, gosh, Marge, not
yes.
so much, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Not my story. And then
not my story.
Yeah. And then we spend years, I could spend years going to courses and lectures and seminars of how to detach that those weren't my stories, and that my stories came in my own experience, and then another seminar to make it okay to detach, and that you're not abandoning your parents' upbringing because they had wonderful things to say. Some were wonderful, and some didn't really assist us, you know, haven't been the best. And so,
but that's the beauty of the Lori Fraser fabric, is that those are some of your beliefs, and how through who you are today, your sense of humor, your self-doubt, your creative side, how you create you, and how you deal with all of that. It's always, I don't know if we can ever get rid of those things. If there is a belief we don't believe in anymore, we can stop doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I hope I never get rid, because they keep you humble. Those things keep you humble, I think, you know, and really, there's so much, I mean, there's so much out there. There's so many friends, things you, I have had the most wonderful, I've learned the most wonderful things from my friends, and also people that weren't my friends, that were acquaintances that kind of bug me. Let me give you an example. A good friend of mine who is now a good friend, who I went through so much with, she said one day to me, we were having this conversation across from each other in a coffee shop, and I look around at people all the time because I take in characters, and I love the fabric of people and watching what they do and how they, you know, their little idiosyncrasies. So especially at a restaurant, you see a lot of those because it's people communicating and they're dealing with food and they're looking around. Hello?
Hello, I'm here.
Okay.
Well, maybe Zach said adios.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't want to talk anymore. Okay.
He didn't want to. He was a little uncomfortable getting a haircut in the chair.
See you later. So he's just one court away from, no. Anyway, so, but I remember her saying to me, you know, you're not listening to me. And I was going, of course I'm listening to her. And I could look around and listen, but I remember looking at that part of myself going, I heard everything she said, but sometimes when you're really sitting across from somebody and looking at them and listening, and at that time it was really uncomfortable. I thought, are you nuts? I'm listening to you. You know, I'm looking around, I'm listening to you, I heard what you said. But sometimes a person, who knows what a person needs, and in this case, a person needed me to look at them and listen and try and really get what they were saying. So I remember later on, you know, years later, or months later, asking my friends, other friends, do I listen to you? And do I, and then they would go, oh, yeah, sure, you listen to me. And one person said to me, well, sometimes I know you look around and you take in life. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to really try next time I talk to this person and next time I talk to that person and the next one to listen. And you know something, it changed the conversation. And that person that I didn't like so much that originally said that to me has now become a really good friend, and I'm a much better listener because of her. And it took, it was very uncomfortable to go through that. And so what I'm saying is that sometimes, you know, whether it be a parent or whatever, sometimes we learn from just living our life and being with people. You know, I learn a lot about myself and a lot of really great things from friends, even to stupid things like, you know, how to do dishes better.
We actually choose people who are somewhat mirrors of ourselves. We find relationships with people who have something to teach us that we need to learn.
Yeah, yes, I believe that 100%. And that's, I think, isn't that great about life? I mean, that's kind of like,
if you can look at life that way, and it's taken me a while to figure that out, that it's an interesting journey. It's a roller coaster. It goes up and down, and we all have the end goal of to be whatever your goals are. If it's to be successful as a voiceover actor and writer, and your I love a good storytelling, but how you get there shouldn't really matter. But people want to control that.
That's you said it right there. I want to put a little button on that, a little sparkle around that.
Right.
Because it's true. It doesn't matter. It is a journey. If I hear, you know, I used to hear that all the time. Oh, it's not the destination, it's the journey. Well, you know, it's the journey is my life, you know. And I always think the destination is important, too, for each little journey. It's like, okay, where am I now? Where am I now? And, you know, sure, I'd love to, I think, I have wonderful goals of having wonderful, you know, voiceover careers, and I love a good story going out into the world and connecting to all over. But every moment of, you know, every day towards that is, you want to live every day so that if that's it, then you did it. You had a fabulous life in that 24-hour period. Does that make sense?
It does. And since you mentioned I love a good story, are you going to have a session in July? Where can we...
You know what? I'm going to have one in August. We just had one last Sunday that was so wonderful.
Oh, great.
It's just such a wonderful... It's so wonderful because you can come in here... 4 to 5 people telling true personal stories and hear original music. And we do the show in an intimate little theater, and we do it on an intimate level so that when you hear it, it's a podcast, and when you go to iloveagoodstory.com, you hear the stories on an intimate level so that when you go to the gym or when you're taking a walk, you can plug in and hear them like we're sitting talking right now, you know, as opposed to... at the Hollywood Bowl.
That's great. I must tell you, I read one of your stories called Sauce.
Oh, you did, Sauce, yeah.
I loved it. I so loved it. It was so beautifully written, and I just wanted to have you, if you don't mind, just, what made you decide to write this story and explain a little bit of it to our listeners?
Oh, well, how kind of you to read that story. Thank you. Well, Sauce was written because the Topanga fires were happening, and I was, at the time, I was living in a nice little house and with my nice little husband, and we were sitting there, and the news was on, had been on, and I, the night before, and I'd gone to sleep, woke up, and my husband woke, you know, he usually woke up really early in the morning, and we'd make coffee, and I came in, and there was a fire. In our fireplace, and I was sitting there drinking my coffee, and I was thinking about the Topanga fire, and I felt absolutely useless, because here is this fire, and there's, you know, these firemen, and there's people losing their homes and everything, and we were sitting comfortable in our little house, and I was looking around, and I saw these little candles that represented celebrations or, you know, just warm evenings, and we had a little kerosene lamp, and I was just thinking of they were all little fires that brought warmth and happiness, and here was this raging fire in Topanga, and I just couldn't, I wanted to do something, and so Johnny had, you know, this, as the story goes, I said, what are we going to do? I feel hopeless. I can't sit here sipping coffee. It's just ridiculous. Just people are losing their homes, and he said, well, you know, when
in New York, when, like, there was trouble, like, we would always make sauce. I was like, what? Yeah, we make sauce, you know, like when Joey Petrillo's mom, like, got breast cancer, we made sauce. And when, you know, Eddie Fitzgerald's father lost his job, and we made sauce. And so, you know, when you're in trouble, just make sauce. And I was like, sauce? Spaghetti sauce. So I said, oh, my God. You know, he goes, for the firemen. So he told me what to do. He said, on your way home, stop at Smart and Final, get the aluminum trays. And meanwhile, I came home, and he was making sauce. There were big pots on the stove, and he had a towel over his shoulder, and he was sweating. And anyways, we made manicotti and baked ziti, and we, you know, took it up there to the firemen. And And the story was written because that's what we did.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful. I can't believe we are almost out of time.
Oh,
and
thank you.
You are so delightful and delicious. And I want to once again tell people that they can contact you from your website at iloveagoodstory.com, right?
Yes. Thank you so much for saying that.
Absolutely, because I think people want to hear more of you and maybe little Jane Jetson. And
welcome to I Love a Good Story, dear.
That's right. You'll have to come back on the show because we didn't even talk about your improv experience with the Magic Meatheads.
Oh,
I
my
love.
Gosh, the Magic Meatheads. You've done your homework. Listen,
I know. I was,
you know,
a Girl Scout.
You're a
joy. I was
joy.
A Girl Scout. But we can talk later, darling. But
okay.
Again, Lori Fraser, thank you so much for being such a delightful guest. And hopefully you'll come back and join us another time on how to be comfortable in your own shoes.
Thank you very much. Okay,
you're
bye,
welcome.
Everybody. Bye, Lori.
Bye. Please join me next time for another wild and crazy journey in someone else's shoes, as my guest will be You'll have to tune in next week. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you so much for joining me and Lori Frazier and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. See you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes. Bye-bye.